Det här är Northfield på ön Tinian som tillhör Marianerna och ligger 240 mil söder om Japan. Sommar 1945 var det här världens största flygbas. Den 5 augusti lastades världens första uranbomb i en B-29 som heter Enola Gay efter pilotens mor. Morgonen därpå, före gryningen, lyfte Enola Gay. Målet var Hiroshima. Den 12 april 1945 dog USAs president Franklin Roosevelt plötsligt. Nationen sörjde sin förlorade ledare. Tolv år tidigare hade han räddat det amerikanska folket ur den djupa ekonomiska depressionen. Och efter hans ledning av USA under kriget var nu slutsegern inom räckhåll. Två månader före sin död hade Roosevelt varit på Jalta och bidragit till att lägga den politiska grunden för efterkrigsvärlden. Roosevelt och Churchill ville återupprätta demokratin i Östeuropa, särskilt i Polen. De bad också Stalin bekräfta att Sovjetunionen skulle gå med i kriget mot Japan 3 månader efter Tysklands kapitulation. Stämningen var munter när de tre stora trodde att de hade blivit eniga.
Well, Yalta was really the high point of the relationship between the three men. Victory was in the air, the Germans were in retreat. And so there was a good deal more talk, in addition to military matters, to the future. Poland again became the most troublesome point. And it's interesting that both Roosevelt and Churchill felt they had an agreement with Stalin.
Problemet med Polen, liksom i hela Östeuropa, var att västledarna ville ha en fritt vald regering där. Ryssarna ville ha en sovjetvänlig regering. De trodde att väst förstod och accepterade det.
Poland, from their point of view, was not going to be an outpost of the West, nor any of the Balkan countries. They thought they'd had various agreements about spheres of influence with Mr. Churchill. They left Greece pretty much in British hands. They could have certain proportional influences in Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, particularly Poland. My impression at Yalta was that the Russians thought we had in substance accepted that demand.
Roosevelt levde bara i 2 månader efter Yalta. Men redan då hade han och Churchill blivit desillusionerade av hur ryssarna tolkade det man hade kommit överens om.
A very, very tough exchange of telegrams on both sides between Stalin and Roosevelt makes it very plain that Roosevelt, before he died, knew that Stalin was breaking his agreements.
I think it went sour because the military developments strengthened Russia's hands, and that where the Russians had felt it necessary to be considerate of Western opinion, at Yalta, a few months later, they didn't feel any such necessity because the war was going so well for them, and therefore they swept aside some of the engagements they got into. That certainly applied particularly about Poland.
Sovjetledarna hade betraktat Roosevelt som en vän. Hans efterträdare, Harry Truman, var en okänd storhet både för dem och hans egna rådgivare.
I left to, as soon as Roosevelt died, to go back to see Mr. Truman. I wanted to be sure that President Truman understood the position of our relationships, because there'd been so much euphoria in the air about the warm relationships that existed with our gallant allies. And I got home within a week of the time that Roosevelt had died. I found, in my first experience with President Truman, I found he was an avid reader. I found he'd read all the telegrams and understood from those messages the difficulties we were going to have.
När den sovjetiska utrikesministern Molotov kom till Washington den 23 april 1945 fick Truman en chans att visa att han, som han uttryckte det, skulle stå på sig mot ryssarna.
Even as his arrival raised hopes on the thorny Polish question, the world learned that Russia had just signed a 20-year pact of friendship with Poland's Warsaw government.
Den polska regeringen hade inga västvänliga medlemmar. De var allihop prosovjetiska. Västledarna blev upprörda. Molotov träffade Truman och hans utrikesminister Stettinius, som var Al-Jahis chef.
By that time, the Polish situation had, to use a gentle word, crystallized. The Russians were moving forward. They seemed to be paying no attention to the kind of provisional government that the British and Americans had hoped for. Therefore, protests, angry protests, were going to the Russians about that. And Truman decided to have a showdown at which he was gifted. On that occasion, as you know from what is now part of the history books, he accused Molotov, in effect, of violation of the agreements as early as that. This is a strange thing to do in the midst of a war, by no means yet won, with an important ally, but he did it. And it ended by Molotov saying, I've never been talked to like this in my life, and Truman saying, well, if you keep your agreements, you won't be talked to like that, just like a school teacher. Stettinius, who'd been present, told me the next morning that he was still shaken. You see, he thought, and I thought the whole conference was off.
Well, that was an unfortunate conversation. It was one of the first diplomatic conversations that Truman had. And I can only say that it was not a diplomatic statement on Truman's part. He used good, solid Missouri language, which was very definite, and Molotov had talked to other people that way, but had had no one talk to him that way. So that he was very much upset, and I gained the impression that he thought this was a new voice, not Roosevelt anymore, but a more aggressive president.
När Truman avlade presidenteden hade han lovat att fullfölja Roosevelts politik. Men hans plötsliga bryskhet mot Molotov oroade krigsministern Henry Stimson. Dagen efter konfrontationen skrev Stimson till Truman om något som han trodde skulle förändra USAs förbindelse med Sovjet. Om det berättar Stimsons levnadstecknare med George Bundy.
Stimson wrote to Truman, I think it is very important that I should have a talk with you as soon as possible on a highly secret matter. I mentioned it to you shortly after you took office, but have not urged it since on account of the pressure you've been under. It, however, has such a bearing on our present foreign relations and has such an important effect upon all my thinking in this field that I think you ought to know about it without much further delay. The next day, April 25th, Stimson explained to Truman that his view of foreign policy, Stimson's, was dominated by the imminent prospect of atomic power and the terms which might be got from Russia in exchange for sharing atomic secrets.
Det var första gången Truman fick en detaljerad redogörelse för atombomben och dess diplomatiska potential. Han bad Stimson leda en kommitté som skulle utvärdera bombens militära användning. Två olika typer av atombomber hade i hemlighet utvecklats. En som var laddad med uran och en som var laddad med det syntetiska ämnet plutonium. Uranbomben behövde inte testas, men det fanns bara en. Plutoniumbomberna, som var lättare att massproducera, måste testas före användning. Den första skulle bli klar i juli 1945. Ett specialförband inom det amerikanska flygvapnet hade börjat öva en taktik som innebar att man skulle fälla en mycket stor bomb med hög precision och sedan försvinna så fort som möjligt. Överste Paul Tibbets var chef för förbandet.
Up to this point, anything in the way of an error in bombing up to 500 or 600 feet was considered good bombing. So I told him then, if you have a 100-foot error from 25,000 feet, you're just a borderline case. I want it less than 100. Well, I was told immediately, this, you can't do this. And so I said, I don't know why not. And they said, well, nobody's ever done it. But I said, that's no reason why it can't be done. I said, practice, they tell me, makes perfect. So I said, we'll practice, and you'll practice until you do it.
Få Från de framskjutna baserna på Marianerna fällde redan de amerikanska B-29:orna konventionella bomber över de japanska städerna. I början var resultaten inte framgångsrika. General Curtis LeMay utvecklade en ny taktik, brandbombsräder på låg höjd.
With aerial photography you could outline a general area, but not precisely. You just couldn't avoid doing collateral damage, and I'm sure we burned down a lot of Japanese buildings that had nothing to do with the war industry at all. This, of course, is one of the sad things of war that can't be helped.
Den 9 mars 1945 fälldes 2000 ton brandbomber över Tokyo. 40 kvadratkilometer av staden förstördes. 80 000 människor dog. Fler än i hela England under den tyska flygoffensiven 1940-41. LeMay anföll den ena staden efter den andra. Det såg ut som B-29:orna skulle kunna besegra Japan på egen hand.
It wasn't until General Arnold asked a direct question, how long is the war going to last? And then we sat down and did some thinking about it, and it indicated that we would be pretty much out of targets around the 1st of September. And with the targets gone, we couldn't see much of any war going on at the time.
Våren 1945 hade Japan inget att sätta emot de amerikanska stridskrafterna i luften och till sjöss. Största delen av Japans handels- och krigsflottor hade sänkts. Genom en effektiv allierad blockad var de japanska arméerna utomlands avskurna från hemlandet. Flygvapnet var lamslaget av bränslebrist och befolkningen hotades av hungersnöd. De amerikanska attackplanen härjade ostört. Många japanska politiker insåg att deras land inte skulle kunna hålla ut så mycket längre. Den 1 april 1945 landsteg amerikanska styrkor på japansk mark, ön Okinawa, på bara drygt 50 mils avstånd från huvudöarna. Amerikanerna mötte hårt motstånd. Samtidigt bildades i Japan en ny ministär av amiral Suzuki, som tidigare varit i opposition mot de militanta kretsarna.
When Suzuki cabinet came into existence, the military situation was deplorable. And moreover, the economic plight of our nation was quite apparent. The military command tried to squeeze the last drop, so to speak, of the nation's blood, in order to prosecute further the useless war. But it became evident to any sensible man that we were at the end of a tether.
The younger officers in the army, the extremists, thought that we should fight to the bitter end until every man had been killed. But the war minister, General Anami, didn't agree. He thought that if we fought on till the Americans invaded the mainland and then hit their forces hard on the beaches once, we could then negotiate peace on terms more favorable to Japan.
Men Truman tänkte inte förhandla. Det hade han sagt i kongressen i maj efter Tysklands nedlag.
Our demand has been, and it remains, unconditional surrender. I want the entire world to know that this direction must and will remain unchanged and unhampered.
Truman stod nu inför två stora problem. Vilken politik skulle man föra mot ryssarna i Europa? Och skulle man begära att de uppfyllde sitt löfte att gå med i kriget mot Japan? I Tyskland skålade de ryska och västerländska soldaterna med varandra. Men Churchill varnade redan Truman för Sovjetunionen. Han uppmanade till ett nytt toppmöte innan, som han uttryckte det, demokratins arméer upplöstes. Mm. Trumans nye utrikesminister James Burns ville slutföra kriget mot Japan innan ryssarna han går med och ställer till problem för väst också i Asien.
It was ever present in my mind that it was important that we should have an end to the war before the Russians came in.
Men Stimson ville undvika förhastade beslut i fråga om både Europa och Fjärran Östern innan bomben var klar. Han skrev till Truman.
Over any such tangled weave of problems, the atomic secret would be dominant. It seems a terrible thing to gamble with such big stakes in diplomacy without having your MasterCard in your hand. Truman reassured Stimson. The Big Three meeting was postponed until the 15th of July, on purpose to give us more time.
Harry Hopkins, Roosevelts nära vän som Stalin litade på, skickades till Moskva i slutet av maj. Hans uppgift var att för tillfället tona ner den polska frågan. Han rapporterade att han hade lyckats förbättra situationen. Stalin hade också, på eget initiativ, lovat att gå med i kriget mot Japan den 8 augusti. Medan Hopkins var i Moskva fattade Stimsons kommitté sitt beslut.
The committee studying the atomic bomb unanimously recommended that it be used as soon as possible, without warning, against a major Japanese military establishment. Only this, Stimson thought, would provide the psychological blow which might induce Japan to surrender. Although he agreed with some of Truman's advisors that the Japanese should be given an ultimatum, which made it clear that they could keep the emperor, he opposed announcing this until after the bomb had at least been tested. But after the war, he wrote, it is possible, in the light of the final surrender, that a clearer and earlier exposition of American willingness to retain the emperor could have produced an earlier ending of the war.
Washington, den 18 juni 1945. General Eisenhower får en hjältes mottagande efter segern i Europa. Samma dag lägger den högsta militärledningen för Truman fram sina planer att invadera Japan i november.
We gathered up our papers and started to go out, and Mr. Truman spotted me and he said, Mr. McCoy, nobody gets out of this room without voting, without expressing himself. Everybody else has, do you think I have any other alternative? I looked over at Colonel Stimson. He always liked to be called Colonel. He'd been a colonel of a regiment in World War I, and rather than secretary. I looked over at Stimson, and he nodded. He said, go ahead. So I started in, and I said that I thought that we ought to have our heads examined if we didn't at this point begin to think in terms of a political culmination of the war rather than a military culmination. And I said I'd give them some terms. I'd send a message over to them. I'd spell out the terms, just what they were. And I remember trying to, Mr. Truman said, well, what are your terms? What would you do? I hadn't quite prepared for the actual dictation of the surrender terms at that point, but I started in. And I said, in the first place, I thought, say, you can have the Mikado, but he's got to be a constitutional monarch. You've got to have a representative form of government from here on. You can have access to, but not control over, foreign, over raw materials, so that you can have a viable economy. And I spelled it out as best I could. And I'd say, besides that, we've got a new force. And it's in the force of a new type of energy that will revolutionize warfare, destructive beyond any contemplation. I said, I'd mention the bomb. Well, mentioning the bomb, even that late date, and that select group was like... It was like they were all shocked because this was such a closely guarded secret. It was comparable to mentioning skull and bones at Yale, which you're not supposed to do. But Mr. Truman said, this is just the sort of thing I was trying to reach for. Get that all spelled out. At that point, Stimson did come in and join and support my position. But then later on, Mr. Burns, who was then Secretary of State, who was not present, vetoed the idea of offering them the Mikado. One can only speculate as to whether it would have happened if we had put the message to the Japanese government, the form that I indicated, including the Mikado. I have always had the feeling, in view of some of the information that we've had since, of the tendency on the part of some of the real military hotheads and in Japan to think that this was perhaps the best way out, that we might have been able to avoid the dropping of the bomb.
Vid det här laget är slaget om Okinawa nästan över. 12 000 amerikaner har stupat. En blodig påminnelse om vad en invasion av huvudöarna skulle kunna kosta. För japanerna blev priset ännu högre. 100 000 stupade. Och för första gången under kriget gav de japanska soldaterna upp i tusental. När det sista motståndet upphörde den 22 juni tog den nya japanska regeringen sitt första steg mot freden.
Ultimately, we had to conduct the negotiations with our military opponents, that is to say, America and Britain. But the high command refused categorically to entertain any idea of starting conversation with the enemy powers. The only great power left out of the enemy camp was the Soviet Union, because of the fact that nominally there existed still the neutrality pact. And so this was the only window open for peace endeavors, and this window looked toward north. And so we argued it out with the military command. And the military command finally, reluctantly, acceded to our request that we start negotiations with the Soviet Union in order to arrive at the final destination, which was Washington and London.
Men Stalin hade konfererat med den kinesiska utrikesministern, inte den japanske. En väldig japansk armé ockuperade fortfarande delar av Kina, bland annat Manchuriet. Ryssarna och kineserna förhandlade om villkoren för att Stalin skulle angripa japanerna. När Truman for till Europa den 7 juli för att träffa Stalin och Churchill visste han genom underrättelsetjänsten att Japan ville få slut på kriget, men inte genom villkorslös kapitulation. Truman och Burns hade nu flera valmöjligheter. De kunde modifiera kapitulationsvillkoren. De kunde uppmuntra ryssarna att invadera Manchuriet. De kunde demonstrera atombomben. De kunde invadera Japan. Truman bestämde sig för att fälla atombomber över Japan utan föregående varning. Han hoppades att det skulle göra slut på kriget snabbt innan ryssarna hann komma med. Och det skulle göra den amerikanska förhandlingspositionen i Europa så mycket starkare. Beslutet var redan fattat när Truman kom till Potsdam-konferensen den 15 juli. Morgon därpå, strax före gryningen i Alamogordo-öknen i New Mexico, bevittnade bombens konstruktörer Robert Oppenheimer och hans forskarlag den första kärnvapenexplosionen.
I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty, and to impress him takes on his multi-armed form and says, now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. I suppose we all thought that one way or another.
Plutoniumbomben exploderade med en styrka som motsvarade 20 000 ton trotyl. På explosionsplatsen hade sanden förvandlats till glas. I juli 1945 var Japans ekonomi slagen i spillror. De japanska städerna var försvarslösa mot B-29-ornas räder. Visserligen var armén i stort sett intakt, men krigsindustrin hade bombats sönder. Av civilbefolkningen hade 1 miljon dött. Miljontals människor var hemlösa. Inom det amerikanska flygvapnet hyste man inga tvivel om att kapitulationen måste komma inom några veckor.
It was a hopeless situation for them, and the B-29s were flying over Japan at will, and they couldn't do anything about it. We could destroy any target at will without much opposition. So with this hopeless situation facing, that they just didn't have the will continue. As a matter of fact, they'd been trying to get out of the war for about 3 months before they actually did, and that they had asked the Russians to be an intermediary to try to negotiate them out of the war, and the Russians had been stalling. They got the European War finished so they could get into the Pacific War before it ended.
Stalin och Molotov vägrade att ta emot den japanska ambassadören innan de reste från Moskva till det som skulle bli det sista mötet mellan de tre stora på 10 år. Den amerikanske krigsministern Stimson kom också till Potsdam. Han rapporterade om atombombsprovet för Truman och Burns, och de blev, skrev han i sin dagbok, mycket nöjda.
President was tremendously pepped up by it and spoke to me of it again and again when I saw him. He said it gave him an entirely new feeling of confidence. And when Stimson told Churchill about the successful test the next day, Churchill said he now understood how this pepping up of Truman had taken place and that he felt the same way.
Britterna och amerikanerna diskuterade nu om de skulle berätta för ryssarna om bomben. Somliga hävdade att dess fulla betydelse som diplomatiskt påtryckningsmedel skulle bli uppenbar först när den hade fällts över Japan.
After one of our meetings, just as we adjourned, Truman went up with his interpreter to Stalin and told him briefly what we had discovered and what the effect of the atomic bomb would be. And all Stalin did was to nod his head and say thank you quite curtly. His expression changed in no way, and that was all there was to it.
When it was a tremendous disappointment, we thought he would be flabbergasted at this thing, but he just passed it off as an incident. Whether he knew about it, whether he didn't want to show any great emotion in regard to it, I don't know. All I know is that he took it very much in his stride, and somewhat to our disappointment, went on to the next item in the agenda. And this rather dismayed Stimson, because he thought that once having disclosed this, there would be immediately a great Russian rush on the part of the Soviets to sit down and talk to us about what the future implications of this thing and what the future uses of it would be, but he got no encouragement at all.
Stimsons taktik hade misslyckats. De tre stora hade mötts innan atombombens fulla styrka hade avslöjats. Och nu var Stimson orolig för att utrikesminister Burns skulle utnyttja bomben för att försöka förmå ryssarna till direkta eftergifter.
I rather think that Mr. Burns had something of the thought that this would be a sort of a point of leverage in diplomatic exchanges. Whereas I think Mr. Stimson, or Colonel Stimson, had a different idea of the use of the bomb.
He wrote to the president to urge direct negotiation on the nuclear issue and argued that relations with Russia may perhaps be irretrievably embittered by the way in which we approach the solution of the bomb with Russia. For if we fail to approach them now and merely negotiate with them, having this weapon rather ostentatiously on our hip, their suspicions and their distrust of our purposes and motives will increase.
Atombomberna var nästan klara att användas, så det var dags för Truman att ställa ultimatum till Japan. Och även nu ignorerades Stimsons råd. Truman och Burns beslöt sig för att inte modifiera kravet på villkorslös kapitulation genom att erbjuda japanerna möjligheten att få behålla sin kejsare.
My hope is that the people of Japan will now realize that further resistance to the forces of the nation, now united in the enforcement of law and justice, will be absolutely futile. There is still time, but little time, for the Japanese to save themselves from the destruction which threatens them.
The very purpose of it was to assure them that they would have the decision, and at the same time, not start a controversy among ourselves about the position of the emperor.
When the Potsdam Proclamation was issued, Foreign Minister Togo and I worked together many sleepless nights, and I took this proclamation to the attention of the foreign minister and explained the substance of it. Togo at once said that this was acceptable, and he immediately went to the palace and asked for an audience. The emperor approved Togo's judgment that this should be accepted and the war be terminated at once.
Foreign Minister Togo said in the cabinet meeting that we can stop the war without the question of the emperor. We can keep the emperor right. But at that time, we, Japanese government, asked some intermediate mediation to the Russia. So many cabinet ministers said, well, let us see the situation for a while.
Premiärminister Suzuki förklarar att Japan inte fäster något avseende vid ultimatumet. Sovjetunionen kunde kanske rädda Japans ära. Stalin hade ju inte undertecknat Potsdam-deklarationen, så nu var han kanske villig att medla. Stalin berättade för Truman om de japanska närmandena. Men Truman kände redan till dem. Amerikanerna hade forcerat japanernas koder. De båda ledarna kom överens om att inte ta notis om fredsträvarna. Truman får hem den 3 augusti. Eftersom det inte hade kommit något svar från Japan gav Truman flygvapnet tillåtelse att fälla atombomben så snart det lät sig göra. Den japanska utrikesministern Togo telegraferade nu till sin ambassadör i Moskva att en dags dröjsmål skulle leda till 1000 års ånger, så han måste omedelbart tala med Molotov. Men Molotov tog fortfarande inte emot ambassadören. Den 6 augusti, 2 dagar före det utlovade ryska angreppet mot Japan, lyfte Enola Gay och påbörjade sin 250 mil långa flygning.
I noticed when I taxied out that there were several hundred people that were in the area that the aircraft were parked in. There were some in front of the control tower, and people were out there standing to look and see what was going on without really knowing what they were looking at, but it was something different, so they wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to see what was taking place.
Now there's one bomb, and one airplane is going to carry that bomb, and that's the group commander, that's then Colonel Tibbetts, with his full crew. My crew was assigned to fly in formation on his right wing during the bombing for a couple of reasons. Somebody had to fly there, and I was scheduled by him to fly the second mission, if there were to be a second mission. We would have a third aircraft flying on the left wing who would drop back just before the bombing. He was equipped with cameras. We would fly unseen by each other for the first 3 hours, and to make rendezvous at 8,000 feet over Iwo Jima at 6 a.m. This was the plan.
We made the rendezvous quite successfully, and then we had about an hour and a half or a little over that to go along in a lazy formation on a beautiful night out over the Pacific with moons and cloud puffs that looked like powder puffs. It was a quiet, peaceful evening, believe me. And nothing much went on. A little bit of talk in the airplane, but that's always normal on a mission. But then you get a quiet period. And while we were going along there, I guess everybody was dreaming or something, because it was quiet.
Klockan 8:15 på morgonen den 6 augusti 1945 fällde Enola Gay sin bomb över Hiroshima från 9800 meters höjd.
As soon as the weight had left the airplane, I immediately went into this steep turn, as did Sweeney and Marquardt behind me. And we tried then to place distance between ourselves and the point of impact. In this particular case, that bomb had 53 seconds from the time it left the airplane until it exploded. That's how long it took it to fall from the bombing altitude, 53 seconds. And this gave us adequate time, of course, to make the turn. Now, we had just made the turn and rolled out in level flight when it seemed like somebody had grabbed a hold of my airplane and gave it a real hard shaking, because this was the shock wave. It had come up. This was something that I was glad to feel, because it gave me a moment of relief. After all, having worked on that bomb for well over a year, you know, that 53 seconds time while I'm turning the airplane, I'm wondering, is it or is it not going to work? And, of course, the shockwave hitting us was indication it had worked. Therefore, I felt that success had been achieved.
When the bomb came, I saw that yellowish flash, and I was buried in the darkness. The two-storied wooden building that was my house with 8 rooms in it was blown down to pieces and covered me up.
When I regained consciousness, everything was pitch dark all around me. I tried to stand up, but my leg was broken. I tried to speak, and I found that 6 of my teeth had been broken. Then I realized that my face was burnt and my back was burnt. There was a slash right across from one shoulder down to the waist. I crawled to the riverbank, and when I got there, I saw hundreds of bodies come floating down the river. And it was then that I realized, with a shock, that all Hiroshima had been hit.
The day was clear when we dropped that bomb. It was a clear, sunshiny day, and visibility was unrestricted. So as we came back around, again facing the direction of Hiroshima, where we saw this cloud coming up. The cloud by this time, now 2 minutes, cloud was up at our altitude. We were 33,000 feet at this time, and the cloud was up there and continuing to go right on up in a boiling fashion. It was rolling and boiling. The surface was nothing but a black boiling, only thing I could say, like a barrel of tar. Probably the best description that I can give. This is exactly the way it looked down there. Where before there had been a city, distinctive houses, buildings, and everything that you could see from our altitude, now you couldn't see anything except this black boiling debris down below. We took pictures as rapidly as we could. My immediate concern after that was, it's time to get out of here.
I encounter along on the Caesar's lines of escapees. All of them had no cloth whatsoever on their bodies. And the skin from their faces, arms, and breast peeling off and hanging loose. And yet, without any expression, in deep silence, they are escaping. I thought it was a procession of ghosts.
The words went back basically to the effect that the bombing conditions were clear. The target had been hit. The results were better than had been anticipated. And that message was sent on back. From there on, it was just a proposition of letting everybody talk for a few minutes and get it all out of their system. The excitement was over. Pretty soon it became a rather routine flight back home. As a matter of fact, it was routine enough that I let Bob Lewis and the autopilot fly that airplane and went back and got some sleep for about the first time in 30 hours. And I was ready for it.
The long, drawn-out war, you begin to get casualties from the side effects of exhaustion, privation, disease, and things of that sort. So getting it over with as quick as possible is a moral responsibility of everyone concerned. Now, it's true that we knew the war was over, and if we just waited a little while, it would be over. Because the Japanese were negotiating, and we knew this by the fact that we'd broken our code and were listening to the communications. But I believe that President Truman made the proper decision to use it because it probably hastened the negotiations, and even if we just saved one day, to me it would be worthwhile. You have to do it.
I thought it was absolutely unnecessary. Because by the time the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, we were conducting negotiations with the Soviet government, looking toward an early end of hostilities. And we were completely exhausted. And the Navy and the Army too. We are slowly becoming more amenable to the idea of peace.
An appalling subject to talk about, and the United States has consciously and unconsciously a great deal of guilt complex about its use. But Truman made the decision on the basis of the military necessities, and I think an impartial analysis, particularly from the Japanese themselves, more evidence is coming out that they would have fought on fanatically. You know, they did fight on fanatically in some of the islands, even in spite of the surrender. And the emperor wouldn't have had the courage to have called it off, or wouldn't have had the support to call it off.
When I heard about the atomic bomb, I was so astonished. And I frankly say the American people is brutality. I wondered if American people are really civilized. But at the same time, I thought this may become a key for Japan to end the war.
Det tog två dygn innan den japanska regeringen insåg vad atombomben var och vad den hade åstadkommit. Minst 70 000 människor hade dött i Hiroshima. Ytterligare 70 000 hade skadats. 97% av stadens byggnader var förstörda eller svårt skadade. När president Truman fick höra det sa han att det var historiens största händelse. De fredsinriktade i den japanska regeringen hoppades att bomben skulle få de militanta att gå med på kapitulation. När regeringen sammanträdde på morgonen den 9 augusti fick de höra ännu en förkrossande nyhet. Föregående kväll hade Molotov äntligen tagit emot den japanska ambassadören i Moskva, bara för att utan omsvep tala om att Sovjetunionen tänkte förklara Japan krig. 8 timmar senare, exakt 3 månader efter Tysklands nederlag och precis som Stalin hade lovat, anföll Sovjetunionen den japanska armén i Manchuriet. Det japanska hoppet om rysk medling var borta. De amerikanska förhoppningarna om att kunna slutföra kriget innan Sovjetunionen blev inblandat grusades. Senare samma morgon fällde amerikanerna en plutoniumbomb över Nagasaki. Men de militanta i den japanska regeringen stod fast vid sitt krav på att slippa ockupation för att kapitulera. De fredsinriktade ville bara att kejsarens ställning skulle bevaras. För att bryta dödläget lät man för första gången kejsar Hirohito fälla avgörandet. Han valde freden.
I shall never forget that emotion of that time. Everybody started to cry. So I looked at the emperor's face. He just kept silent, but he wore a white glove on his hands. He wiped his own face several times. So we had we could know that his emperor himself, his majesty the emperor himself, crying. I shall never forget this emotion of this, in this room at that time.
Den 10 augusti meddelade japanerna att de skulle kapitulera om kejsaren fick behålla sin suveränitet. Den 12 augusti gav de allierade sitt svar som inte innehöll något sådant löfte. Vid det här laget var det upprorstämning i den japanska armén.
Even if 1,000 atom bombs had been dropped, and even if Japan had been completely devastated, you must remember that Japan's honor was at stake. The pride of the Japanese at that time, who felt that the only honorable way out of the war was not to surrender, but to die to the last man.
Amerikanerna spred flygblad som uppmanade japanerna att kapitulera. Det var nära att omintetgöra de fredsinriktade regeringsmedlemmarnas strävanden i en svår situation.
That could have caused a lot of trouble.
We had to reach a final decision as fast as possible.
Den 14 augusti sammanträdde kejsaren på nytt med ett splittrat krigsråd och sa att man nu måste gå med på de allierades ultimatum. Han skulle själv hålla tal i radion dagen därpå. Samma natt tog sig en grupp yngre officerare in i kejsarpalatset och försökte lägga beslag på inspelningen av kejsarens budskap. De hittade den inte. Kuppförsöket misslyckades. Klockan 12 på dagen den 15 augusti fick det japanska folket för första gången höra sin kejsars röst. Kriget, sa han, har utvecklats i en riktning som inte nödvändigtvis är till Japans fördel. Dessutom har vår fiende börjat använda en ny och mycket grym bomb. Om vi fortsätter striden leder det inte bara till den japanska nationens utplånande utan också till hela den mänskliga civilisationens förintelse. Därför måste vi uthärda det outhärdliga.